With another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show.
Oh yeah, here we are, folks. It is the debut of Heartbeat Radio right here on Powerhouse Radio, brought to you by ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. My name is Jay Oletto. I am the host of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. I've been doing this for a while. I haven't done it in a while, though, but we're bringing you this live broadcast tonight with none other than legendary wrestling trainer and the leader of Stampede Wrestling, so to speak. The guy who's done it all in the business. I bring to you your host, Bruce Hart. Hey, Bruce, how's it going tonight?
I'm doing really good, Jay. Nice to hear from you, and I appreciate all the kind words, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you guys, you know, some legendary, you know, people like Evan Ginsberg and Tom Burke and Johnny Mantell and all those guys. So it should be a lot of fun. I have the utmost respect for all of you guys. So I'm really looking forward to just kind of talking the talk and listening to you guys. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely, Bruce. And this starts a new era for Heartbeat Radio, as you are now fully backed by ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. We have spoken in the past, Bruce. We ran that promotion to kind of get something, a little bit of a noise going about Hart Brothers University. And we even got Mr. Vellante, Bobby Vellante, from New York to go to Calgary. Can you give us an update on Bobby? How did he do in his training so far?
Oh, he did great. He's he brought a lot of passion and dedication, which are all important. And he had good athletic ability. He's making good strides. I think he's back having a mini vacation in New York. And but yeah, he reminded me of sort of a throwback to when I was in the back in the 90s. I was doing some stuff with that outfit that was running in Queens there at the Elks Hall or whatever, and I actually really enjoyed it. There's quite a few guys like Tiger Khan and all that bunch that were coming out of there. And so, yeah, Bobby Vellante reminded me a bit of some of those guys, you know. And so that's a big part of our initiative out here right now, is just sort of, sowing some seeds at the grassroots level, which I think is something the business badly needs right now. And then we're hoping to be interactive with some of the other promotions that are endeavoring to get off the ground down in different parts of the United States, which is sort of part of our endeavor with some of the promoters in the states and Carolina and Texas and Ohio and in the East Coast there with you guys. So That's a big part of it. I think you got to sort of resow the seeds at the grassroots. That's something the business is sorely in need of, you know, for all kinds of reasons, which we can kick around later. But so that's a big part of it. And I'm hoping that some of our initiatives, even on this radio broadcast, you know, enhance, you know, the regeneration of the business at the grassroots, because I think that's something that the business has been lacking since the more or less takeover by Vinnie Mac and company back in the 80s, you know. And they've kind of scorched and burned the the foundation. And I think the fans are the biggest ones who have suffered because of that. You know, like back in the day, you used to, as you guys know, be able to wrestle, go to wrestling matches on a weekly basis, almost anywhere in North America. You'd go to see some really good wrestling and indulge and all like that. And that's all been pretty much taken away from wrestling fans. I can only imagine the same if hockey or baseball or whatever had the same thing, where maybe George Steinbrenner or some decided back in the day he needed to eliminate, you know, minor league baseball and all this other, and then it kind of came down, he would have destroyed all the feeder territories, and I can only imagine where baseball would be if you didn't have any young guys, coming up on a regular basis. And that's sort of where wrestling's at today. You get a few new guys, most of whom have developed in places outside the WWE, maybe Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, but that's one of my big concerns just about the future of the business if they don't fortify the foundation of it. So, but yeah, As I said before, I'm appreciative of people like yourselves. You guys sort of are old school all the way, and I'd like to see how things go with this initiative. It's something I sort of, having grown up in the business, I sort of feel almost an obligation to kind of lend myself to that initiative.
Absolutely. And while we were discussing that, Bruce, the phone lines absolutely lit up, and you're going to be joined tonight on your radio show, Heartbeat Radio, right here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, by a number of guests. And let's start by bringing in Mr. Evan Ginsberg, 718 area code. Evan, you're on the line with Heartbeat Radio. How's it going, Evan?
Very good. Very good. Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege being on with the great Bruce Hart and all of you guys.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Evan. It's, I'm equally honored. We've crossed paths and interacted in the past, so I always had a tremendous amount of respect for your views and your passion for the business. So I'm delighted you saw fit to kind of join us today. It's a privilege.
Thank you. And we shared a mutual friend in the late great Tiger Khan, and he always spoke so highly of you and all the crew in Calgary.
Yeah, it's guys like him that I have like a real soft spot in my heart for the Big Apple. My mother is from there, and we were born down there back in the day. My mother's from Long Beach, so.
Wow.
but yeah, it sort of was like a homecoming of sorts for me in the 90s to be out in, in Queens there, and we did places like Deer Park and some of those other places, and it just sort of, made me feel that there was a huge need to, be having wrestling in smaller places like that. It's become sort of a feast or a famine scenario these days. If you're maybe in some big city, you get to see the WWE or whatever, maybe more than once a year, but it's nothing like the old days where you'd go every week and, indulge and be a fan, and the wrestlers would equally have an opportunity to kind of go out and wrestle and interact with the crowd and learn their craft and all of those things. And as I've said to many people, if the seeds are not re-sown at that grassroots, I'm not sure how long the business can survive. You can kind of, do what WWE is doing right now, but even they, the biggest indication to me that there's a huge dearth of talent is, their need to keep going back to these old blasts from the past. Somebody told me the other day they were talking of bringing Sting in there, or they bring in The Rock once in a while, or my brother Brett, or, The Undertaker comes out of his coffin for WrestleMania once a year, or something like that. But
yeah,
there's not that many you know, and I'm not even to knock the new guys coming in, but there's no place for them to develop their craft. They don't, you know, it doesn't just happen overnight, and they have this sort of sterile atmosphere, in my estimation, of NXT. The best thing they could do with something like that, if any of those guys have any potential, is send them someplace, which is the way it used to be back in the day. You know, if Vern Gagne had a hot prospect, he'd maybe send him up to Calgary, or Jim Crockett would, or Fritz, or, you know, the promoters would be sending guys, you know, that they thought had star potential, and they'd go somewhere else, and then they'd come back. And in the wrestling business, you got to sort of be hit the ground running when you're going to be a star. You know, even like Vince back in the day, he'd bring in The Undertaker, he'd, you know, bring whoever was a star somewhere else, Hogan or the Bulldogs or, you know, Kerry Von Erich or Piper or whatever, but virtually none of those guys developed in WWE, and it's sort of the same now. Not to denigrate the NXT guys, but virtually nobody's really come out of there and set the world on fire, you know, that I can think of. Maybe I'm, you know, not aware of whoever and whatever, but you know, there's, you need that place, you know, once you've trained them, you need some place to actually let them
learn. Hone your craft.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you got to learn how to interact with your opponent and the crowd, and you know, refine your intuitive skills and all those things. You know, and it's no substitute for just going out and doing it. You know, no other sport could I think of where, you know, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, you need that transition period, whether it's playing college or, you know, the minor leagues or whatever, in order to, you know, become of major league caliber. And it doesn't happen overnight, or you can't just do it in a, you know, a sterile atmosphere like NXT or whatever. And I'm hoping that our friends in Connecticut or wherever the hell, you know, have maybe started opening their eyes to the fact that they should be aiding and abetting the, you know, the people that are capable of replenishing and regenerating wrestlers, you know. And back in the day, of course, they went to every length possible to eliminate them, which was, you know, counterproductive as hell. You know, all they needed to do, you know, all those places like Minneapolis, Texas, Portland, Calgary, Florida, whatever, they were sort of like a glorified minor league for those guys. All they needed to do was, you know, throw them a bone or interact with them a little bit back in the day. Instead, they systematically went to every length to, you know, get rid of them, which, you know, the fans are the main ones, unfortunately, that have suffered because of that. You know, they've been, had it pretty much taken away from them, you know, and they go out and have the once or twice a year fix, depending on where they're at. But if I was a wrestling fan, I would feel shortchanged, or I would maybe just turn off wrestling altogether and find something new like MMA, I guess, or whatever the hell to indulge in, you know. But it's testimony, yeah, of the strength of the wrestling business that it's endured and survived. And a lot of the stuff WWE's inflicted on them has been a byproduct of the lack of talent. You know, they've, you know, had all kinds of, you know, fillers and crap that, you know, is not, you know, worthy of the fan support, but, you know, they've nonetheless still sustained it, just because I think people still want to get into it. But I give the fans a lot of credit for enduring, you know, all the so-called dark ages, whatever the hell, you know.
That's the word, endure. We've been enduring, yeah, this for a long time. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, guys, listen up. We've got a lot of people on the line, and like I was telling you before, Bruce, I kind of just jumped into this one last minute, so I'm not sure who everybody's phone numbers are, but I'm going to try to figure it out.
You're doing a great job, Jay. Just wing it. That's the way to do it anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll call in the ring. I shouldn't be saying that. I'm not a worker, but we'll call in the ring here. Let's bring in, let me choose a number here. Who's been on the hold for the longest? Looks like the 949 area code. 949, you're on the air with Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio and Heartbeat Radio tonight. What's your name? Where you're from? 949.
You talking to me?
Maybe, yeah, 949. You're calling from the 949 area code?
Yeah, I'm just listening to the channel. I didn't punch a button to.
No problem. I'll put you back on.
I heard Cowboy Johnny was coming on, so I wanted to listen to Cowboy Johnny Mantell.
All right, let me get him. Hold on one moment. All right, hang on the line. All right, we're gonna go 940 area code 940. You're on the line.
Hey, Bruce.
Hi, how are you?
Johnny Mantell, how's Heartbeat Radio tonight?
How are you, Johnny? Good to hear from you. You doing all right?
We're doing great, man. Glad to have Evan and Tom Burke on with us tonight. And, Bruce, you're hitting it right on the head. You know, you and I have talked about this, the grassroots. And like you said, it's the opportunity to work every night and do what you have to do and learn this business. But it's also those 4 and 5 and 8 and 10-hour trips that you and I as young punk kids with water behind our ears made with the legends that taught you this business as well, and that's really has been left out, and I think they're seeing it today in the talent.
Oh, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Johnny. You and I have discussed that, but we used to learn as much just from riding down the highway with these old guys like Harley Race and Terry Funk and, Lou Thez and all those guys, and they would offer you so much insight and, you know, feedback about, you know, little things. And it was a real, kind of a incredible learning process and something that, is sorely lacking today. And I doubt if, like, even the guys who are in the WWE, many of whom need a lot of schooling, I might add, you know, that would be what, you know, one of the prescriptions and the remedies I would be giving to so many of those guys, you know. Yeah, if you could spend some time with some of these guys, even like yourself, Johnny, or there's guys like Terry Funk or some of these old veterans that are still alive, you know, just to be talking the business and sharing perspectives and asking them, for input or any of that kind of stuff. And we used to take it for granted, you know, back in the day, you know. We'd spend 40, 50 hours a week on the road. And, yes, you're always just talking wrestling and how to get over and what if you did this and, you know, what about that. And they give you all these little subtle insights and don't do that and pause for effect or work the crowd or don't forget to do this or that. And all that stuff's almost kind of lost these days, especially even with the emphasis on scripting rather than improv, which was another thing you and I have discussed. Back in the day, we did virtually no, these scripted scenarios. I think the only guys who did much of that back in the day when I was starting was the Mexicans, and all the guys up in our neck of the woods are always sneering at anyone who wanted to have a, you know, move-by-move blueprint of the match for an hour or something. The old farts would always kind of roll their eyes and say, we'll play it by ear or whatever, which was their way of saying, screw that, you know, we'll just do it my way type thing, you know. But,
well, you know, the day of traveling up and down the road with guys and learning this business, you were sort of like a petri dish and a chemistry test all rolled up in one, because on the way to a town, you'd talk to these veterans and you knew who you were working with and you'd talk and get ideas and do stuff, and then you'd have your match, and then leaving that and going to the next town, it would be what you should do and then what you did do and what you didn't do. It would be sort of that it would be a lesson, a test, a challenge the entire time. And, yes, we all did take it for granted, because now looking back at some of the guys we traveled with that are no longer with us, it's pretty sad. to think that we didn't get to say our goodbyes, or, you know, we've stayed out of touch, or we separated from coast to coast, whatever the issues may be. Everybody, I think, and I think the guys up in, like you said, Vinny's world, I think they would Triple H and those guys would say they're missing that today, the chances of getting to ride around with Bruno or Dominic DiNucci or you know, a Graham or a Guerrero or a Vachon or one of those kind of guys, like you said, Funk or Briscoe, the opportunity to travel, break bread, learn from those guys is just remarkable.
Oh, yeah, and almost all those guys had learned from another old fart from their era, you know, like it almost went back all the way. Like my dad, for example, started in the 30s, and one of the guys who broke him in was a guy named Jack Taylor, who was like Frank Gotch's running mate, and they had learned from Farmer Burns, so it went all the way that far back. And I remember having the opportunity to, you know, travel. Stu would have Lou Thesz up once in a while, and you'd have old Whipper Watson and some of those old icons from the, you know, old Frankie Murdoch, Dickie Murdoch's dad, and, you know, some of those old icons, Ike Eakins and Jim Riott, Colin Wright, and guys like that. And it was incredible. I fortunately had the opportunity as a little kid. I never opened my mouth, you know. My dad would sort of just forbid us to, but I'd just be like listening, riveted to these old icons talking, and you know, it was an incredible learning experience. And that's something I'm hoping a guy like Triple H, you know, as he started from what I heard, learned from Killer, you know, Kowalski. So, you know, that's something I'm hoping, you know, some of the people even listening out there, you know, even listening to people like yourself or Evan or Tom Burke, you know, those, you know, wealth of knowledge and perspective there that there's not, unfortunately, enough people around anymore where you can pick the brains of those people.
Yeah, it's been lost in transition, the business and the way you were brought up in it. It's a test tube. It's like a crop you plant in the ground and you sort of nurture all summer and fall, and you either harvest right before winter or you know, however the season may fall for that crop. Those guys learning this business today learn it in such a different way and such a scattered way that it's really, I say it all the time, it's so unfortunate for the guys of today, these independent guys of today that drive all over the country to get a chance to work and work in front of different people. These guys don't get more looks because they're doing the best they can trying to learn this business, and the business hasn't sort of reached out and tried to help them any really learn this business in the proper way or the way it was done, like you said, for years and years and years. And it's going to be a lost art if we don't help that grassroots system sort of get reinvented.
Yeah, I'm not sure what, you know, I'd like to hear perspective from Tom and Evan and some of them, but I'm not sure if it's paranoia at the top end where they're afraid of these indie guys supplanting them or replacing them, or, you know, they have to come up with a better system. One of the problems right now, and I see a lot of guys who are getting pushed not that long ago, being jobbed and, you know, kind of pushed down the ladder, guys like Ryback and Damian Sandow and some of those guys, Curtis Axel, and frankly, it would be better in the old days. You wouldn't have a guy who had been a star getting chopped out. You'd send him to another place. You'd send him to Portland, or they'd go down to work for Fritz or Vern or Harley or whatever, and you'd bring in new guys. But these days, you know, once these guys sort of have ceased to be in the main events, I saw a bunch of the poor bastards the other day, about 12 of them fighting the Shield or whatever. You know, basically, you know, in the old days you would have the you know, the no-name jabronis, you know, getting squashed in a 12-man abortion like that. Instead, they got all these guys who were only a short time ago, Alberto and all these other guys that were, you know, pretty high-level stars, you know, basically, you know, my translation of it was these guys are, you know, have been reduced to squash boys or jabronis, you know, which I don't know how you revive those guys, especially when you don't have any, you know, as far as I know, there's not 12, you know, new superstars of that caliber waiting in the wings to come in. You know, they got a few unproven no neophytes coming in from Nexus or NXT or whatever the hell it's called, you know. But yeah, there is a huge sort of a feast or famine type syndrome right now, and I'm sure they must be aware of it. Maybe their arrogance precludes looking at it in a rational perspective, though I don't know.
Yeah, well,
ironically, a lot of the guys they're pushing now, Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins of The Shield, Cesaro, they all came out of the indies, particularly Ring of Honor, and they're seeing that a lot of these indie guys that have been out there a long time, you know, are worthy of being pushed.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even I'm going to throw it in there, that even a guy like Sami Zayn from NXT as well, who was on the indie team for a long time, he's going to make it big in due time. I just want to take a pause for a second here and bring in another one of our guests for the evening. We got Q-Ball Carmichael on the line with Heartbeat Radio. Q-Ball, how you doing tonight, man?
Hey, good, guys. Sorry I'm late. I did an Omega show last night here in North Carolina, which is Shane Helms and Mike Maverick and David Coates and Matt Hardy's group, and was a few hours away, and they drew 1,200 people, and it was a packed house, and the air conditioning wasn't on, and it was hot, and man, we were tired. I got home at 4 this morning, and late start to the day, late start to everything, so I'm running behind all day. I caught some of the show. Oh, it was, Bruce, it was
I'm always getting homesick hearing it, so.
It was, you know, in the main event, it was the Briscoe brothers, who I just love those guys to death, against Matt and Jeff Hardy. And, you know, when 1,200 people are pounding the bleachers and chanting, "This is awesome." I mean, it was the best main event that I had ever witnessed on any show I personally had been on in my life. It was incredible. I mean, oh my gosh.
I'm glad to hear that. You know, more often than not, I hear the opposite. The show was an abortion, and they brought in a bunch of old retreads from WWE, like, you know, the Bushwhacker Iron Sheik or some shit like that. You know?
Yeah, we've all done plenty of those, unfortunately. But, you know, I was listening to what you guys were talking about, you know, about the fear up top. And, you know, I look at it this way. You know, if you look at the last few, what I call super indie guys, you look at Cesaro, you look at Daniel Bryan, you look at CM Punk, because those guys were all super indie guys before they went to Ring of Honor and went up top. Those guys absolutely were the most over guys in the last few years. And, you know, one's gone and, you know, one's on top of their job and one. And, you know, it's sad that the business isn't like it was. I mean, you know, I had my place up there from 96 to 2000, and I put everybody over and was happy to do it and be there and get paid for it. But, you know, it's unfortunate they don't have that roster of guys like a Johnny Rods or a Larry Sharp or Jose Estrada, or guys who can go in there and be competitive, you know, and go in a six-man or a 12-man or whatever and be competitive. But the guys know they're going to go over. Instead, they're jobbing these guys they've sunk a ton of money into. And exactly like you said, Bruce, do they have 6 or 12 other guys that they can replace and bring up the ladder right now? And the answer is no to that. So you almost have to wonder what the mentality of the management is when you do something like that. I look at stuff and, you know, I'm old school. It's got to make sense. And I got to see, you know, one thing has to lead to another. And there has to be a big picture scenario that I can grasp. And when
I see
things like that, I'm like, I don't get any of it.
No, simple. It's one of the pretexts of old school wrestling. Always have a reason. Yeah, if you tell somebody to paint stripes on his ass and have horns and a tail and something, you know, and they ask you why, you should be able to explain why, you know, but everything is too much of this. Johnny and I have discussed that it's what we call figuratively flinging shit against the wall and hoping it'll stick, you know, all too often, no rhyme or reason. And I think part of their problem in New York is they got too many cooks in the kitchen. You know, invariably just got to have sort of one booker. You know, you might have guys giving you advice and stuff, but you can't have four head coaches on a football team and all trying to go different directions and all this other. You got to, you know, essentially have one basic direction you're going, and you might have a little deviation with some comic relief or some other bullshit, but for the most part, you can't be having, you know, half a dozen different directions where you're, you know, that aren't compatible or, you know, supporting each other. And I see that all the time. You know, it drives me nuts to see Raw and SmackDown. You know, they got something where you're taking it seriously, then they have some horseshit with Hornswoggle, and then they got the Great Khali, you know, and then the Divas, and then Stephanie doing her thing, and you know, there's not any real perceptible you know, theme or format to it, and I think that compromises it too.
Yeah, I agree with you. Hey, Evan, how did it sound to have me put over a couple Ring of Honor guys?
Cue Ball and I sometimes debate about Ring of Honor, and I love those guys, so you know, I'm always happy
to
see
they
them.
They can go.
I'm always happy to see them make it.
The main event must have went, you know, it's funny because you're on a show that we couldn't start on time. And the thing about Omega is they always start promptly on time, but they had police come set up a metal detector because there were so many people lined up out front before the show. They had 490 pre-sold tickets, and there was 400 or 500 people lined up 2 hours before the show last night. They came from... We had fans from 12 different states come to the show, and it was just ridiculous. So the police decided, we better bring in a portable metal detector. And they metal detected, everybody brought them in. So it started like 15 minutes late. So we wanted to let the fans get in to see the show start. We didn't want to, you know, because they were stuck because of the security. So we didn't want to, you know, make them pay for that. So they all got in, and we started the show. But, I mean, it was, you know, it was a hot building. The principal had a couple wrestling shows there, and these guys tried to tell them, you know, we don't draw the normal 200 people, just so you know. And they decided, oh, we don't need the air conditioning on. It's only 82 degrees outside. It must have been 120. It must have been 120 in that building. And, of course, I went out because I'm hurt. They gave me a nice spot, managed against Shane and the Bravado Brothers with C.W. Anderson and Caleb Connolly, who's a great young star, and Mickey Gambino, another great young star. And I was in a suit. And, oh, my God. You could have rang water out of that thing after I was done. But the main event went probably 25 minutes. And to captivate a crowd for 25 minutes in a main event, an independent show after 2.5 hours in the building, I would have said prior to this it was not possible. But with Matt and Jeff and the Briscoe brothers, it was it was incredible. I mean, it was just a great show top to bottom. And it, you know, that refreshes your perspective, and it recharges your battery.
I'm glad to hear about you when you're just – talking about 25 minutes, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to address too. Is to me, main events and stuff like that need to be, you know, going longer, you know. And back in the day, it's, you know, I'm sure Johnny and guys like that would agree, it was fairly common. You had guys like the Funks and Harleys and Briscoes and some of those guys back in the 80s and 90s. I know we had all kinds of them up in Calgary, like Dynamite and Brett and Ron Starr and guys like that. But they'd go 60 minutes and have you eating out of their hand and build to this incredible climax. And that's another thing that's been sort of, you know, lost these days, is those guys who could actually engage and sustain a crowd for 60 minutes and have them building to this cataclysmic climax and all like that. And these days, if I see a match go 20 minutes, all too often, you know, it's about as long as they can go, and most times they can't even sustain it. You know, it's sort of a, you know, hodgepodge of ill-placed high spots and interference and all the other artificial additives and crap, but that's something to me that's missing and should be addressed, or they should be trying to restoring that kind of thing, you know. It drives me nuts when I see WWE cards, even when they come up here and they have like 10 matches or 12 matches, and none of them go more than 10 minutes, you know, and you barely get your, can even sink your teeth into the matches.
Bruce,
you know, like,
Bruce, at $25 to $599 a ticket now at Madison Square Garden.
Well, whatever happened to the average fan, you know, the like back, I know back in the 80s, you know, we had an ass kicker of a crew like Dynamite and Brett and Jake and Junkyard and Davey Boy and Schultz and Honky, all those guys. And I think the top ringside seats were $10, you know, and the fans were getting their fix every week, you know. You know, we probably could have charged more, but my dad wouldn't even have thought of that, you know. But yeah, you're taking the, you know, the blue collar, which the average wrestling fan is sort of like an ordinary Joe, you know. They've been, you know, pretty much almost taken out of the equation, you know, which is
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely,
which is ridiculous. It's a perversion of what it should be.
I was sitting there for the first time in 14 years at Madison Square Garden, and that's how much desire I have to see the WWE product. First show in 14 years, somebody threw me some tickets. I'm sitting there with a sea of kiddies. They're all 6-7-year-old kids with their parents. It's a totally different audience.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
it's not even a real wrestling. It's like the circus or going, you know.
Exactly. It's like Ringling Brothers or the Globetrotters. It's a different experience now.
Yeah, you go once
well, you know
year
what I,
and you buy your foam thumbs and your merchandise and
exactly.
And,
that's what it is now. Yeah.
And you come back a year later, and you know it's a different cast of clowns and elephants and
exactly.
You know,
well, that's what I, you know,
bald headed.
Bruce, I went into an Evans show when I was fortunate enough on the 12th of April to be on Evans Legend TV show, and one of the things I went into is the fix to the businesses. You know, when all of us were, Evan was following it and all of us were getting into it and stuff, if you looked at the broad spectrum and big demographic of the average fan, it was, there was kids, there was teenagers, there was 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, there was parents that introduced their children to it and took them, and aunts and uncles and grandparents. And, you know, if you look at that demographic now, it's the disposable fandom. What happens is they get these kids who follow it until about the time they go to college. Then they go to college and they come out and they look at it, and it doesn't look the same because they're educated enough where they can look at it and tell what they're doing almost insults their intelligence, so they shy away from it. So they replace these fans from age 5 to 18 years old constantly. And to fix the business, because, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, the Attitude Era, the ratings were twice what they are now. You know, the business was booming and the Monday Night Wars. But part of that was, if you looked at that crowd, there was such a broad spectrum and demographic of fan, and that has completely gone away now. The fans are almost disposable.
That should be cause for concern for them, you know. I think they're always blowing smoke up their own asses on TV about, you know, some bullshit about they, you know, had the highest rating on some such and such. They're always having those little blurbs on the screen, but I totally agree. I think their fan base is eroded, and it's not a very solid foundation either. It's like a, you know, pretty rickety foundation, and, you know, just a couple of false moves, and they could, you know, find themselves scrambling. You know, I've seen far bigger companies than WWE go under, you know. It's, some of these huge corporations and airlines and even countries like the USSR or whatever the hell. So, but yeah, as we've been saying, you know, they really need to be, I think, embracing and endeavoring to, you know, support some of these promotions like the one Q-Ball was talking about down in Carolina. And, you know, I suspect if they hear of something like that, they'll probably say, oh, we got to eliminate them, you know, they may be a potential threat,
hey, Bruce,
or something like that.
Hey, Bruce, I think old Blue's got a coon up the tree out back.
Oh yeah, there's. I thought I'd add the, you know, it's like the WWE and Matilda. I gotta have a dog part of the show here. But
that's right.
Wrestling.
Mine's actually
going
being good
to the dogs. That's the metaphor, you know.
That's right.
All right, guys, this has been a great discussion so far. I'm really digging it. Old school is cool again here on Heartbeat Radio, sponsored by Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio on the Powerhouse Radio Network. Just so you guys know, we'll have a brand new schedule of shows starting tonight with Heartbeat Radio. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a Raw reaction show go on live after Monday Night Raw at 11 p.m. I know they do an overrun for a while, but there'll be a live reaction show at 11 p.m. tomorrow night right here on Powerhouse Radio. Tuesday night, we have the Greg DeMarco Show featuring special guests each and every week from the world of pro wrestling. I think we're going to have Mike Bennett from Ring of Honor on Tuesday night. He's going to be talking about his big match coming up with Tanahashi at Ring of Honor in New York City. Wednesday night is the flagship PWP Radio Show, which Bruce has appeared on numerous times. Thursday night, independent wrestler Dave Destruction from Pro Wrestling Syndicate right here in New Jersey will be hosting his own show called Thursday Night Destruction. That's this Thursday night at 8 p.m. And then it goes all the way back around to Heartbeat Radio right here next week on Powerhouse Radio Network. Now, I know we're expecting one more caller, and that is Tom Burke. I do have a couple people on hold, so I'm going to take a couple more calls now, see what everybody's got to say. Going with the 413 area code. 413, you're on the line with Powerhouse Radio, Heartbeat Radio, right here, 413, you're on the line.
Yeah, hi, this is Tom Burke at this end.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? This is Jay from Powerhouse Radio. You're on with Bruce Hart.
Hey, how you doing,
Ginsburg,
Bruce? How you doing, Johnny, Q-Ball?
Johnny Mantel.
Nice to be part of this, man.
Great to hear from you, Tom. I appreciate you coming on. That's an honor. And
I was sitting here listening to all your exchange of thoughts and ideas, and I just like to give my two cents, if I may. Thank you.
Oh, please do. I invite them.
One thing that I that was interesting that came up in the conversations was Triple H. Having known him since he was wrestling for Kowalski as Terra Rising back in his infant days in wrestling, we sat down and talked several times. And he had a passion then for the wrestling business of old, and he continues to do that. I've been in contact with Triple H within the last year on several occasions in regards to some wrestling memorabilia from my private collection, which has been sold to the WWE for their upcoming Hall of Fame. Which the stuff that they've gotten for me has always been, at this point, WWF orientated, or I should say triple double F orientated. But he definitely
Tom,
has
do
a
you
passion
know,
for.
Tom, do you know that WWE asked the legends to donate their gear and. Some of them really deserve a payday. they're making a fortune off that Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm sure they are, yeah. But, you know, it's probably what they're looking for, too. I just happen to have had some very rare items, maybe, that go back to maybe prior to when we're talking legends, you know, I don't know which legends you're speaking about, but I had some stuff from the early days when WWF was formed back in the 63-64. But that and also the fact is we're talking about the boys going on road trips years ago, night after night, day to day, and everything, which, sad to say, does no longer exist today just because of the nature of the business, you know. And it seems interesting that William Regal, who was one of the trainers down there, tells a lot of the independents that they should go to England during the summer, because in England they still wrestle on the circuit and they have a regular circuit every day of the week, You know, so it still exists. It's a, you know, because we just don't have this in the States. I mean, I'm not that familiar with ROH, how often they run. I don't think they do a 6 day, a 7 day schedule, but you know, those days are long gone.
Oh yeah, I'd like to see maybe some of the seeds planted that might perhaps, you know, enable that, you know, to rebuild or whatever. But I think one of the big problems with the indie promoters in the States, too, from what I hear, is too many of them don't work with each other. They're all, you know, my dad told me back in the day, it was back in the 40s before they had the, you know, the formation of the NWA, they, that was almost the genesis of the NWA. They, all these promoters were screwing each other and wrestlers were double-crossing, and they finally, my dad told me, it reminded him a bit of the scene in The Godfather with the heads of the crime family. He's all coming together, you know, all these kind of charlatans and whatever, and then they started working together, and that kind of proved to be you know, a huge benefit for the whole business. And they had like Luthez or whatever is the world champion and all like that. But I think some of the indie promotions need to be, they should be supporting each other more, interacting more, and I think big mistake too many of them are making. They're all trying to be a second-rate copy of the WWE, and I think they'd be better serving the business and themselves if they were striving to be a compelling alternative to it, you know, chart their own course, develop their own stars, and not trying to be a second-rate copy of the Connecticut or the WWE stuff, you know. But, you know, I think there's a lot of food for thought there with some of that stuff, and I'd love to hear some perspectives from some of these, some of you guys, you know.
Well, I'll step in and I'll just say, you know, Vince is Coca-Cola. Bruce and I know well enough that if we're going to put on a show next Saturday night, we're going to be 7-Up. We're not going to make another cola and try to match what Vince is doing up there. You got to be different and you have to be real. And I think these guys on the independent scene, they would really hone their craft being promoters or doing whatever they're doing by allowing their shows to be real. Take it back to the old school where fans came, like Bruce said, every week they'd fill up an arena in this town or that town. Every week and in small towns all across.
Oh, yeah. And they would indulge in the notion whether everyone, yeah, regardless of whether everyone is saying it's all phony or fake, or they didn't really want to know. And I think you almost got to go back to where you're treating it. You know, it might sound like I'm living in the past or something. You're treating it as if it's a damn shoot, and you're kayfabing, and you're doing all the, you know, people might stare at you and laugh at you, especially in this age of social media and smart markism or whatever the hell. But I think
you know, Bruce, let me just step in. And since Tom's joined us, we're all together now. Let me just give you all a little scenario, and again, I know this isn't about Vince. We're talking about wrestling in the world today, but let me just give you all a little scenario about last Monday night here at my home. Of course, all day long I get notifications of Daniel Bryan's father passing away, and so we lead up to the show Monday night at Monday Night Raw. First person they bring out is Daniel Bryan. Well, with the world of social media today and everybody on the internet talking about it, you would think Daniel would come out, and Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, you think Daniel would come out and tell the fans, look, my father's passed away, I'm sorry, I got to be with my family, we're going to give him 2 weeks off, we're going to take two, whatever it's going to be, you're going to be honest because everybody's talked about it all day long. They come out, beat him up, put in an ambulance, haul him off. And within 15 minutes of that scene happening on Monday night, I get a notification on my Twitter account asking me, wasn't that a great angle that they did up in New York with Daniel Bryan beating him up so he could be off for a while to spend time with his family? Now, in the old days, when there wasn't social media, Bruce, and you'll back this up too. If you were going to Japan, you'd get hurt or you'd have a loser leave town and you'd
leave.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
But you can't do that anymore in today's world. So the only thing you can do is going back where you can bring fans in and they're coming and thinking, they're trying to find that hole in your work so they can say, oh, yeah, it is fake. But if you can fool them all night long and make them believe what you're doing is real, you can go back to the old style. And it would be great grassroots training for the boys eventually if they did make it up there.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree.
Tom,
absolutely. When somebody was finishing up or something or going away, they would, like you said, do the injury and they'd be in Japan or whatever. And it was only through newsletters and correspondence through networks of people that people knew what was going on. Today's like we are in a social media world. I mean, you get a hangnail and they know about it, So it's just a completely different ball game. But I concur that, what you said earlier about Vince's Coca-Cola promotion compared to and another promotion, so many indie guys try to replicate what Vince does. And we have a promotion here back home in Springfield in the Western Massachusetts area called New Age Old Time Wrestling. And I'm involved in it, and I emphasize to these guys, I said, you want to be your own individual. You don't want to be a carbon copy of everyone. Find your own character.
There's a zillion Elvis impersonators out there. Most of them are starving.
You know, last year, I was driving my car, and the news came on, and they were talking about termination of a snack called Twinkies. I'm driving around, and I come to a stoplight, and I said, geez, no more Twinkies. And I get this idea. We could have a manager called Mr. Twinkie. We had a young kid who was very lightweight, the 120 pounds or so. So anyways, I got a hold of the promoter, got a hold of the kid and everything. So we made him a manager as Mr. Twinkie for a little while. Till he went back, but then he ended up going to college, so he had to drop it. But, you pick up on things like that. I remember the Grand Wizard told me one time that whatever's current in the news, you pick up on it and you use it in a way to promote whoever you're, in his case, managing. And when a politician in Japan was elected as prime minister, his name happened to be Tanaka, and he was managing the Professor Tanaka and Mr. Fuji. So he's on there with Vince being interviewed, and he turns around and he congratulates Professor Tanaka that his cousin has now been elected as the Prime Minister of Japan. So, you just pick up on things like that, I mean, there's just many things one can do that is, it's not far-fetched, but it's good. Like this whole thing was in the Ukraine. In the old days, we would have a Russian heel and you have a Ukrainian babyface.
Oh, yeah, I'm surprised any of them, I'm not sure what's predicated their kind of, almost kind of staying away from the political, lest they forget Iron Sheik was, who had been a journeyman jabroni for about 10 years, including up here, he happened to be the only Iranian in the business at the time of the Ayatollah and the hostage taking, so all of a sudden he was converted into and more of that. It's easy, they should be having a Ukrainian or some guy as a takeoff on Putin or, some of these other manifestations in the Middle East, I'm not sure what, that used to be an easy, it's all part of the, the underlying propaganda of the business.
I mean, look at our Japanese wrestlers. We're heels, over 25 years after the war ended,
Oh, yeah, the Germans and the Japanese and then the Russians were...
They got a good run.
Hey, Bruce, we have a fan question for you, Bruce, and this can go to all the guys, too, just so we can get on a little bit of a different topic, moving in a little bit of a different direction. And
sure.
There's been a lot of talk about... ECW in the news lately on the independent scene because there was a company called Extreme Rising, which Shane Douglas was involved in, that folded, screwed a lot of the boys out of their paycheck and their booking, and just completely fell off the map. Didn't give anybody an explanation. There was also an incident last night, Hardcore Road Trip. Apparently, a bunch of the boys as well, it was like an ECW type of promotion, were screwed over by a promoter in Canada, and he basically took off with everybody's money and hasn't been heard from since. But a fan question from Brett Simonello, who is a member of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, he would like to know, Bruce, how would the Harts have fared in the original ECW? Who would have excelled? Who might have failed? And that's kind of adapting to that ECW hardcore brand of wrestling because I don't know if Brett has seen a lot of Stampede, but I have, and that is kind of where hardcore was started.
I think they would have all fared well, and I think Owen and Brett would have, especially Owen, would have fared quite well in the old ECW. I think at one time Owen was... I think invited down there. I know Pillman was trying to get him in there, and Pillman had a little romp in there when he was doing the Booker Man charade or whatever the hell, but with Kevin Sullivan and all that type of thing. But I think they would have fared really well. Another guy that was a Stampede alumni that would have been tailor-made for that would have been at the very top of that would have been Dynamite Kid. Before he ever, kind of had his career derailed by injuries. But yeah, a lot of those guys that were out of Stampede would have been tailor-made for that, you know. And so hopefully that answers that.
Absolutely. What do you guys think about these promoters kind of using these tactics nowadays to kind of steal money from the boys, to take the gate and kind of run off without paying anybody? Q-Ball, I know you wrestled last night, you said, for Omega. What do you think about this? Have you heard the story yet?
Yeah, of course I did. I had friends that are stuck in Canada still. But, you know, here's the thing is, you know, Bruce and I in our first conversation discovered that we'd both worked in Hawaii, and we'd both been the victim of this 30-plus years ago, Bruce. I mean, this
is back
in
the early
new.
80s, yeah.
Yeah, this is nothing new. Guys act like this is new. This is not new. This has been going on since the dawn of time in pro wrestling. The situation is now there's social media, so everybody and every mark and everything is made aware of this, and it's self-perpetuating. But this is nothing new. This has happened since, I mean, I've been in 31 years. It's happened since I got in. So it's really, you know, it was worse back then because there was no social media to get help. I mean, we had guys stuck in Hawaii, Samoa, all over the place that were stuck, that couldn't travel, that had no money, that couldn't even eat, that had to hide in pineapple and coconut fields from the promoters. So this is not new. This just gets more press because of social media.
I remember guys being stranded in Poland and places like that and having to go to the embassy, and they were, you know, not sure if they're going to get out alive, and there's all kinds of stuff like that, you know.
Well, you know, this happened just fairly recently. A friend of mine, Luke Gallows, who started TNA Doc, whatever you want to call him, he started wrestling with Dorian DeVille, and I lived in South Jersey. He used to come to my house. I tutored him. I worked with him when he was younger. Great guy, great friend of mine. I mean, he was in Nigeria, and he was supposed to wrestle, and he was held up by Nigerian guards with M16s and forced to wrestle in front of the president of the country with nobody in there, just him and their local champion. Of course, Luke was smart enough to put the guy over, but, you know, I mean, this is a year and a half, 2 years ago. So this is nothing new. It just gets more press. We've all been screwed. There's a guy on the phone, including John, myself, that proves that it hasn't been screwed by promoters. I mean, it's the nature of the business. It's never going to change. It just gets more press. And it's unfortunate, and it sucks because, you know, those guys like last night, what I witnessed last night did my heart good because I saw a great main event, and I saw the promoters put $200 extra in the envelope of the two guys that were in the main event that came in to work the Hardys, the Briscoe brothers. And I'm telling you, that doesn't happen enough anymore. It used to be, you know, not that much maybe, but a fairly regular thing. If you had to match tonight, you were really good or something. This motor might had a good house, might stuff you a little bit extra. But, you know, it's not common anymore. So,
you know, I'm glad to hear that story because nine out of ten things I hear these days are kind of the flip side where guys got screwed or they paid or nobody in the crowd or all that other.
You know,
it's nice to hear a good story.
I don't want to digress too much, but we were talking, you know, you and John were talking about promoters and trying to copy Vince. And, you know, the reason the promoters in the States, at least where I'm at, I still work 8 to 10 shows a month. And, you know, even Hurt, I'm fortunate enough to get work. So, I mean, but I see egos and I see guys, you know, this has become fantasy football. This is, if you can pay, you can play, like fantasy football. If you can pay to get trained by some hack for $500 or whatever, instead of going to a good school, people do it, and then they're training people, and it perpetuates itself. And everybody fancies themselves the next Vince McMahon. And, you know, it's like independent wrestlers. They watch TV, and they don't know the difference between a TV match and a house show match, and they're out there trying to do a 100-mile-an-hour TV match, and they're not capable of doing that. And that's what they're doing on indie shows, and, you know, they lose people. It's just incredible, but, you know, there's a lot of
I see so many of them have this, what we call a more is better mindset, which it isn't, mm-hmm. you know, the more high spots and more tits and ass and more run-ins and more of all the other stuff, and it should be the exact opposite, you know. In the old days, I'm sure Johnny would probably tell you he was schooled like that, but I remember the old farts would... If you were in the prelim or the opening match, it was about like watching the cartoon before the main feature of the movie or something like that. You're supposed to just go out, warm up the crowd a bit, do your 10 minutes.
Right.
Don't, you know, if you did more than one or two high spots or something, the old farts would chew your ass out because you were trying to steal their thunder. And if you actually went out into the crowd or hit somebody with a chair or used a gimmick or a nut shot or something, they'd... You know, you get your ass reamed out in the dressing room, like, what are you trying to do, you know, steal our thunder and all that other. But nowadays, you know, most prevalent I see in WWE, every match, you know, they're going out and trying to out-high-spot each other, and everyone's trying to get every move under the sun. And most cases, they don't even do any wrestling to set up the high spots, so it's just sort of like watching the damn circus or some damn thing, you know. But it seems to be no direction either, where in the old days, the booker or whoever the hell would, you know, give you a pretty clear idea of exactly what they wanted you to accomplish, get this guy over, warm up the crowd or put in some time or whatever. But nowadays, it just seems like they... You know, I see these guys, whenever I've been in WWE, I'm sort of shaking my head and saying somebody should be taking some of these guys and telling them tone down the high spots because it takes away from the main event and all that other, you know. It didn't seem to be even any direction, or they got four or five guys masquerading as the booker or the matchmaker and all this other, you know. And to me, it's counterproductive and... You know, it's too many cooks in the kitchen. If you got five guys making the meal, chances are it's maybe not going to turn out the way that any one of them thought it should, you know. But that's just my perspective. I'd like to hear you guys' views on some of that.
All right, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do, Bruce. There's one thing I wanted to plan out here tonight, and that is something that you're familiar with that we do here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. And we love good road stories. And I know you've given us a couple, Bruce, in the past. So what I want to do is I want to go around the panel. And any road story, if it's not a road story, something maybe pertaining to the business that would be, you know, entertaining for the fans to listen to here on the inaugural edition of Heartbeat Radio on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. So I guess we'll start with, we haven't heard from Johnny Mantell in a while. Mr. Mantell, you have any good road stories or any kind of stories from the business you'd like to share?
Oh man, road stories. There's so many from the trips and the territories that are so missed today by these guys because they don't have these stories to tell. Let me see a good road story from the day. I'll tell you one on the good Dr. Tom Pritchard. came to California, I'd spent Chavo Guerrero took over the book for Mike LaBelle in Los Angeles, and Chavo brought me. I worked as the hood out there under a mask for a year in California, and about halfway through my run out there, they bring in this young kid from Texas, Tom Pritchard. And Chavo and Mike LaBelle tell me they want to do a little thing with me and him and take care of the young kid and try to teach him, spend time with him. So, and of course, when you get fed somebody like that, you may not travel every night with them, but you're with them just darn near five or six nights a week. You're in the ring with them somehow, some way. So we had a night off, and Tommy thought he'd come out. I invited him out to my house. Most of the guys lived in Santa Monica or Los Angeles, and I grew up in Southern California and still lived in a little town where I grew up, Chino, California. And I invited Tom out for a home-cooked meal, and Tom come out to my house and made him a meal and had him a place to spend the night, to stay the night, but he said he had to get back into the city, and it was about a 60-mile trip highway at nighttime, and it starts raining, and he decides that he has to get back.
Hey,
even though his windshield wipers on his car doesn't work.
Good. I'm on the radio.
So I.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Give me about 20 minutes. I can take care of that problem. I said.
And I'll
you
call
ever
me
seen
back,
somebody
okay,
rub
okay,
lemon?
I want to get off this thing. Is there?
Oh no, will that work? And I said, oh yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
So I send him down to the corner, the store about 2 miles from my house, before he gets up on the highway to buy lemons. And I tell him, okay, you got to get a big bag of lemons. It probably takes 30 or 40 lemons to do this. You got to cut them in half. You got to rub them all over your windshield, your back window, your rearview mirror, everything that's going to get wet. And the water will bead up like wax, and you can see where you're going. So he leaves my house. We say our goodbyes. He leaves my house and goes down to the corner. Well, I hop in my car and follow him down to the corner, too, and park across the street. Sure enough, he goes in the store, brings out this big old brown bag of lemons, comes out to his car, brings out a little pocket knife, starts cutting them in half, and he's rubbing them and squeezing them all over his windshield, all over the back window and on the side glass, and he's just squeezing the hell out of them lemons on his car and thinking he's going to be able to see all the way into Los Angeles. Well, I'm sitting over there in my car just cracking up, just dying, laughing. He gets in his car, heads out, gets on the highway, and goes on. Well, the next night, I show up to the building, and this is in Southern California. And, hey, Tom, how you doing? We're talking to business, and he pulls me aside. He said, hey, I got to tell you something. He said, I tried them lemons last night, but it didn't work worth a damn, man. I just stick my head out the window all the way back into Los Angeles. California lemon. And he said, well, I don't know. Would it make a difference? I said, absolutely. I said, Florida lemons only work in Florida. I said, if you bought Florida lemons and rubbed them all over your car, it's not going to work in California because of the smog. And he took it like knew what I was talking about, and I don't know if he ever tried other lemons on his windshields, but I had him convinced that he bought the wrong lemons for his car that night. Just a little road trip that teaches somebody
that's
about
great.
The
business.
That's funny.
That's great.
The good Dr. Pritchard. He'll love me telling that.
Oh, I just sent him a tweet. I just sent him a tweet about it to let him know that the story was happening right now.
Oh, that's funny.
Awesome. Not the only guy I did that to. I did it to two or three other guys throughout my years. A friend of mine was
been,
about
he
it
must
today.
Have been
so.
In cahoots with Sunkist or something. He's pretty ribbed.
That's a good one. How about cue ball? You got any good road stories or stories pertaining to the business?
Sure. I'll tell you a funny one. In the mid-90s, 94, 95, 96, I was, believe it or not, if you've ever seen anything I do, I was a baby face, which is hard to imagine because I'm just terrible at it. And, you know, just not me. So I don't look like one. And, you know, I'm not done it. And I worked with the Iron Sheik. So, of course,
Mike
you know, I mean, he was, yeah, I would be the baby face. He was one of the few guys who were at WWE who you could work on indie shows and you could still be a baby. He used to be a heel because when you work Bundy or any of those other guys or Brutus or anything, it didn't matter. They were going to be the baby face because people recognized and cheered for him. But anyway, I go to pick him up, and
he's flying from Atlanta, and when he lived there with his wife, and flying Trans Air or something like that his wife worked at, and he flies into Philadelphia. So I'm picking him up in Philly. I live outside of D.C. at the time, Northern Virginia. I pick him up, and I pull up out front, and I got a new trainee with me by the name of Christian York. You might know the name. And maybe 6 months into training, I said, Christian, sit here with the car. I got to go in and find Kaz because he ain't coming out. So I go in, and that was before 9/11, so you could park. So I go in, and here's Kaz at the airport. He's doing the clubs. He's like, and he could never say cue ball. He's just like, Cue ball, come here. Cue ball, come here. And he brings me over, and he goes, listen, she keep working the jabroni. He goes, keep the guy about 20 feet away and bring one up at a time. So I bring up one at a time, and Kaz would go, hey, Bobby, you want an autograph picture? They say, oh, yeah, sure. So he'd sign one. What's your name? How do you spell it? He'd sign it. He'd hand it to the guy. He goes, $10. The guy's like, what? He's like, $10. Oh, Bubba, it doesn't go to Shiki. It goes to charity. So he does this. We get like 35 people. So we leave the airport. He's like, hey, Shiki got $350 for Kubo and Shiki to party with. I'm like, oh, no. So we're going up to Lehigh in Pennsylvania to work in Jim Thorpe or somewhere like that. He goes, we stop. He goes, stop at this bar. I'm like, Kaz, it's 11:30. I'm not drinking, man. He goes, no. She can show you how to work the jabroni, Kubal. I'm like, all right. So I go in the bar. We walk in, and the guy comes over. It's a local little bar, you know. Guy comes over and goes, oh, my God, the Iron Sheik's in my bar. I can't believe it. She's like, hey, Baba, how you doing? The guy's like, good. He goes, hey, you want an autograph picture of the Sheik? The guy's like, oh, my God, I love one for my wall. I own the bar. So she signs, and he goes, hey, Bubba, can I get a cold case of Molson? The guy goes, anything you want. So he brings it out, and she goes, how much? He goes, oh, no charge. And she goes, in that case, I'll take two cases. So the guy goes and gets another case of beer, brings it out. So she turns to the guy and says, hey, it's decent my friend Kubal. He's a wrestler, too. You want his autograph picture? And the guy looks at me and goes, nah, that's okay. I'm like, oh, my God. Talk about putting it in perspective. Like, I don't want this guy's autograph. I'll take yours. So the Sheik says, that's how you work the jabroni. You know, we go out and we go to this. It was kind of cool. It was a Jewish country club, and we worked the show. And I think Sheik and I were in the main or something. And, you know, afterwards he says, let's go to Denny's. And he's at Denny's, and he's trying to work the girl out of a free dinner at Denny's. And we end up getting free desserts because she recognizes him. But it was just like, that was like one of my first times, probably 94, when I was on the road with him. And he told me, he goes, you got to use whatever fame you got out of this business to your advantage. And I was like, it was really funny. But, you know, as time progressed, I would start to throw out that I was a wrestler and stuff to people. And it's kind of crazy some of the perks you get when people either recognize you or know you're a wrestler. But it was just one of those, I mean, one of many. I can go into some horror stories about Public Enemy, Ted Petty, and Johnny Grunge and the Sheik partying all night while I'm trying to sleep and stuff. But you get the idea that the Sheik was always fun. He was crazy and a little off the wall. But, you know, I was one of those guys that always got along with him. And he worked a lot for me when I ran my promotion. I traveled a lot with him. I worked him probably 25 times a year for 2, 3, 4 years throughout the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast. So, you know, good time. It was back when he was still about himself and still had his wits and was still pretty funny.
No, that's a good one. That's a great one. I have a quick story about Iron Sheik. I met him a little over a year ago, and I was just gonna. I paid for a picture and an autograph from him because I'm a huge Mark Hughes fan of the Iron Sheik. And as I'm gonna get the autograph, he drops his marker on the ground. He's sitting in the chair, drops on the ground. He's struggling to kind of get it. So I pick it up for him. I hand it. I go, here you go, Sheik. He goes, oh, thank you, Bubba. You intelligent Jew, like that. And I'm just like, I just started laughing so hard. It was so funny because he's like, I love you, Bubba. You're intelligent. He's off the wall. There's nobody on this planet like the Iron Sheik. Definitely, that was an awesome story, Q-Ball. And let's go around the table one more time. Let's go to, how about Evan? We haven't heard from you in a little bit, man. I know you're the associate producer, director, I can't really remember for sure, of the wrestler. Do you have any good stories from maybe that or anything else in the business you want to share with the audience?
Sure. I was associate producer on The Wrestler, and I'm hanging out on the set one day, and it's that sad autograph convention scene, and Darren Aronofsky, the director, gets this smirk, and he's like, Evan, come here, and I'm like, okay. Next thing I know, he's miking me, and he's no makeup, nothing. He says, Evan, work the room, walk up to Mickey last, ask him for an autograph and a Polaroid, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not an actor. So Mickey whispers in my ear, just improv it. He thinks I'm an actor. So you have like 125 people on the set, these giant cameras in your face. I get up to Mickey last, and we're improvising the entire, you know, scene. So I say to him what I would say to any wrestler that I loved as a kid. I saw you at the Garden. I loved you as a kid. Can I have your autograph? And he says to me, what's your name? And I'm thinking, there's no script for this. And I go, Evan. You know, so he goes, how do you spell it? And I go, E-V-A-N. And he repeats it, and it dawns on me, I'm playing myself in a fictional movie. It's absolutely surreal. And it was all improv. And next thing I know, Aronofsky's running over, and he's pounding me on the chest, and he's going, that was great, that was great. And Johnny Valiant's sitting there. He's one of the guys in the scene. And he goes, Evan, do you know your hands were shaking? I go, perfect. You know? True story.
That's a
great one. Quick question.
Evan. Were your hands shaking as bad as mine were when I was on stage with Edmund Vasquez and Cody Mundy when you guys put me up to get on stage doing a musical improv with two musical legends, the wrestler from your show?
That's right. Cue ball's doing my TV show, Legends TV, and next thing he knows, he's on stage performing with legendary musicians. It was classic.
It was a horrible rip. My wife is watching, and she's crying. I look over, and she's wiping tears out of her eyes. I'm like, I hate
yeah.
you so much right now.
Yeah, that's a true story.
How about Tom? You got anything for us from the wrestling business?
I got two short stories to tell you. The first one happened about 1979 in New Haven, Connecticut. I was with Bull Curry and Killer Kowalski and Golden Boy Mike Madison. We were going into a parking garage. And as Kowalski was driving, and he gets his ticket, and in front of him there's another car. And the car puts him, the driver in front, puts it in reverse, probably purposely, and hits Kowalski. So the guy jumps out of the car, saying that Kowalski hit him. So Kowalski jumps out of the car. The guy sees Kowalski. He turns around. He runs over, and Bull Curry comes out of the other side of the car, and the guy took off. The cops came. We found out the car was stolen. So the guy was probably trying to scam him. And the other story I got to tell you, I was coming down from Burlington, Vermont to Manchester, New Hampshire with Chris Colt, Yagi. I think Yagi worked in Stampede, right? Right, Bruce?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Yagi and Bonnie, who was Jungle Jane, was driving. We're going down this mountain, and the hood flies open and just bent over. I thought if she didn't control the car, I thought we would have been dead easily. Those are my two road stories of others, but that's about it. Guys, I'd love to stay on, but I got to get going here. Thank you for having
me
on.
We heard your phone call. It came over all of us that you couldn't make it off the show.
Okay, yeah, Bruce,
the show.
Yeah, that was Ross. He's calling. Got to call me back.
All the best,
okay,
Tom.
Guys.
Great hearing from you, and talk to you soon.
Thanks,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, take care. Thanks for having me on. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, and last but not least, Bruce Hart, my man. Any great road stories you want to share tonight?
There's a few, you know. It's almost too many. I'll tell you one of the, you know, kind of, we were always up to mischief up in Calgary, as most of you guys probably know, but I remember one time we were out in this town in B.C., a tourist town called Kelowna, and we were out there. I think Bob Johnson, our road agent, had sent us out there for about a week. And anyway, we were headquartered in this sort of like a tourist beach-type town called Kelowna, and Owen and I were out on the beach, and we overheard Pillman, who was sort of a notorious womanizer. We overheard him on the other side of the stone wall trying to pick up this fairly hot girl, and anyway, he arranged to rendezvous with her that night after we got back from the wrestling town, which is about an hour drive out of Kelowna, someplace called Salmon Arm. But anyway, Owen and I were just sort of, Pillman didn't know he had overheard his, thing. So anyway, that night at the show, just to get a bit of a rise out of Pillman, Owen and I told Bob Johnson, who was the road agent, to come up and tell Pillman that he had arranged for us to go to this senior citizen's home for Pillman to do a say no to drugs speech. So initially Owen and I were just wanting to get a little reaction out of Pillman, you know. We had no intention of actually going there, but Pillman reacted so vehemently, like launches into a, you know, an F-bomb laden tirade of F you Johnson, we're not going to an effing seniors home to you know. So at that point, it became a challenge to Owen and me to, so we actually went to this nursing home in the Pioneer Lodge or whatever after the matches, and all the lights are down, and we go up there, and Pillman's waiting in the car. He's not sure if this is a rip or what the hell, and we get this old caretaker out of bed, and we give them some song and dance about we've driven 500 miles and, you know, we had car trouble. We were supposed to be here earlier and the regional health board set this up, and he's saying, well, I don't know nothing about it. And anyway, we got him to get all the old seniors up out of their beds, and it took about 20 minutes to get them all up, and it's like about 11:30 at night, you know, and finally, they got all these old seniors in their walkers and their wheelchairs and their hearing aids and all. And we told this old caretaker to be the, you know, kind of the MC and saying, folks, we've got a real treat for you here. It's, what's his name? Brian Pillman's got a special message for you guys or whatever the hell. And Pillman proceeded to give, like, the most half-hearted say-no-to-drug speech you've ever, you know. I know some of you old folks are probably tempted to be taking cocaine or marijuana or whatever, freebasing or whatever the hell, but I'm here just to say no. And he turns to Johnson and says, let's get the fuck out of here. You know? And in the meantime, Owen had induced this old janitor to said he'd be driven a long way. You don't have any coffee or cake or whatever. And next thing, Owen has Bob Johnson telling Pillman, Brian, we can't turn down their hospitality. They've, you know, and so we dragged that out for about another hour, having the coffee and cake, and then we drove back to Kelowna, and Pillman was trying to make it. He wanted to use the ring band to go to the bar, and Owen took off in it. And anyway, make a long story short, Pillman missed his rendezvous with the hot date, and he had to walk back in the pouring rain. And when he came back, I guess Owen had there was some mangy dog hanging around the parking lot, so Owen took it into Pillman's hotel room and motel room and dressed it up in Pillman's ring attire and put sunglasses on it and the whole works. And Owen screwed out all the light bulbs in Pillman's hotel room, and I think he put a big bucket, waste paper basket full of water on top of the door. And Pillman came back about 4 in the morning and missed his rendezvous, and the lights weren't on in the room, and he slammed the bathroom door, and the waste paper basket came down and hit him on the head, split his head open, so he's bleeding, and the dog freaked out and tried to attack Pillman. And he went running down the outside the sidewalk, and he was so angry he smashed about 4 light bulbs, and next morning, my brother Ross, who was sort of like a Principal Skinner type, is admonishing Pillman that the hotel wants him to pay $100 damage for the light bulbs and all the other damage. And Pillman is insisting to Ross that a dog wearing a sports coat tried to attack him in his room. And Owen and I told Ross that Pillman must have been on drugs again, you know. So, but that was sort of like one of my long-winded, convoluted road stories, you know. There's a lot of that kind of stuff happening in Calgary, though. It's always seemed to be, a haven for all the ribs and the practical jokes and all that type of thing, but...
And being a fan of pro wrestling, there's nothing I love more than these stories, because this is on tape forever now. You know, this is going to be a podcast that's going to be online forever. It's going on iTunes. As soon as it's over, it'll be on iTunes to download. It'll be right here on Blog Talk Radio. It'll be on Stitcher Radio, and it'll go up on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. But it's something that'll be immortalized. You know, these stories are classic. They're fantastic, and I love hearing them. I know a lot of other people out there love hearing them as well. So once again, you're here listening to Heartbeat Radio with the one and only, the legendary Bruce Hart, and we're joined by Cowboy Johnny Mantell, Cueball Carmichael, and Evan Ginsberg right now. And guys, we can go around the panel one more time and just talk about some of the positive things about what's going on in pro wrestling now. I know we've been dwelling on a lot of the negative, how WWE has changed the business in a negative aspect as far as the roots of everything. But what do you guys like about the pro wrestling business right now? And I know we've touched on some things throughout the night, but let's kind of put the focus on that a little bit. Cueball, what is something that you love about the business right now?
Well, you know, I love the same thing about it that when I got into it, you know, that it's I think for the guys that understand the business, you know, we put the fans first and their enjoyment and entertainment, and we put, the business second. And, of course, the guy that we're in there with, you know, if you make a guy look like $1 million and he does the same for you, it's the business, and that's how it is. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to work a show last night that restores my faith in what we do. And, you know, I've had that pleasure a few times. And, you know, I was talking as John related a story about Dr. Tom Pritchard. Dr. Tom and I were rapping back and forth on Twitter about a month or so ago, and we had noticed that there's a bit of a resurgence in the wrestling business. And, you know, a lot of independent shows are drawing more people than they've ever drawn. Of course, there's the ones that draw 50 and, you know, 20 and stuff like that, but there's even more. You know, you got Cassidy Riley's group down in Louisiana that draws 1,000 consistently. There's a group in Arkansas that draws really well. Omega draws really well here, and I think the business is on a resurgence. I think the key to it is like the guy said, you know, WWE offers Coca-Cola, you offer 7-Up, you know, a poor imitation is nothing more than a poor imitation. It's like young wrestlers who get in the business. You know, I tell them, you can't copy guys that have been in the business. They already had a Stone Cold, they already had a Rock. You've got to be unique, you've got to be yourself, you've got to have a gimmick that relates to something that you've done so you can play it, you know, very, very well. And, you know, I think that the thing about the business that I've always loved, I've always had a passion for it, and I search for guys that have a passion for it. You know, we're fortunate enough to have this August. Bruce Hart's going to come down here and do a seminar for the guys in Eastern North Carolina. The response has been overwhelming with people, I mean, who want to attend that. And, you know, that tells me that, as Bruce and I have discussed, is we have to get back to the basic fundamentals of the business, the things that made it great, which is wrestling. Everything around wrestling, whether it's interviews, promos, whatever, whether it's, you know, the little vignettes they do, you know, everything revolves around the wrestling. Wrestling has to come first. That sets up everything else that works in professional wrestling, and I think we're getting back to that. I think there's a few guys that understand that and want to get together and work on the same page. And if we can put egos to the side and we can, you know, work together to try to do this, I think there's a chance to recapture what we once had in the professional wrestling business. And that gets me excited. That makes me positive, and that makes me encouraged about the future of the business. If we can do that, and even if it's a hand, it's not going to take everybody. It's going to take a handful of guys that share the same vision. It was the same vision that was 30 years ago. You know, that
the business first. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 60, 80, 100, it doesn't matter. You know, what the business, what made the business great is wrestling set up everything else that we did. It made everything else that we do possible. And I think we need to get back to that. I see more and more the guys are trying to get back to that. You know, I know that I'm working with Bruce, and he shares the same vision I do, and I'm sure it's the same vision that, you know, I don't want to speak for John, but I'm sure it's the same vision John shares, that we need to get back to what got us there. And that's what's going to make the business strong again and recapture what we once had. If we can do that together as a team and you know, put that first, put the good of the business, the betterment of the business first, I think we can get back to where we were. And that's what gets me excited about where we're going and where we're headed in the business. You know, these other guys will come and go as they please. But the guys that really get it, if we stick together and we work together, we can make great things happen again for the business. And, you know, that's exciting to me. So that's where I'm at.
I agree totally. I think WWE, hopefully, you know, somebody mentioned that Triple H has got some kind of old school roots or whatever, but I think they need to be acutely aware of that. You know, hopefully the success of CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, both of whom sort of came from, you know, those small indie promotion old school roots, should be the best indication to them that, that they should be embracing people like Q-Ball and all these other smaller promotions, not trying to suppress them or put them out of their out of the business. They should be, you know, sending, you know, their promising candidates to learn how to work in that environment, and they should be seeing it as of great benefit to them to have the grassroots refortified, you know, and so that'd be one of the things I'd like to see. You know, the you know, it'd be good for everyone, the fans especially. You know, I feel sorry for the poor bastard fans. They've almost had it taken away from them. You know, back in the day, in Calgary or Amarillo or Dallas or anywhere, you know, you'd go every week and get into it and indulge, and your kids would come, and you know, and it was a big part of your life, and it was great for everybody. And I think hopefully some of the initiatives that you guys have been discussing, you know, are allowed to grow and prosper, because it'd be good for all concerned, you know. And you know, everyone starts to, as I talked before about back in the 40s, my dad told me, you know, the business was in peril because there was all this, everyone was trying to screw everyone, and the big guys were trying to eradicate the small guys, and every, you know, wrestlers were double-crossing promoters and all like that. And I think they finally agreed to work together, and it was like a real renaissance, a rebirth, and a huge period of growth. And there's so much out there for everyone. Like, even if Vinny was so inclined, or Triple H or whatever, they still can't, like, they can't run every big city or every area of the country 52 weeks a year, you know. They just don't have the wherewithal. So I think they should be, you know, seeing fit to help. I'm not talking just even in North America, around the whole damn world. There's, you know, the wrestling business is, you know, kind of falling on hard times. You know, I wrestled in England and Australia and Japan and, you know, South Pacific and all those areas. And those all used to be, you know, a place you could go and wrestle full-time in Australia or New Zealand or England or Germany or Japan and those places. And nowadays you can't, you know, but I think those places are all, you know, capable of revival, you know, and I'd like to see it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lack of that kind of feel to the wrestling business anymore. And that's something that hopefully will kind of start to flourish. As Hubal was saying, it's on an upward trend at the moment, you know. Mr. Mantell, what are your thoughts on the positives right now going on in the wrestling business as far as, you know, we've talked about the negatives, but the positive strides that it's taking?
Well, I see one of the main positives, and again, you know, Hubal said it, and I hate to use the same line, but, you know, when I got into this business, I got into this business because of the brotherhood and the fellowship we had in that locker room. We all were sort of a part of a, you know, I don't want to say secret. We were part of a group that towed by one line. We didn't cross it. We didn't, you know, we were a group together. And if we sold out the building, we did it as a group. If we didn't sell out the building, then we needed to make some changes. And it was a brotherhood. And as I'm meeting some of the independents out on the worldwide circuit, you know, it's encouraging to see some of these guys that have that same passion and feel for the business. You know, I've had a couple here over the last month stop in and break bread with my family and sit and visit and talk to me about their road trip here, or who they worked with there, or what's going on. And it's encouraging to see those kind of guys out there. Are those kind of guys going to get a look from Vince and WWE? You know, probably not, because they're maybe not the right size or the right look. But I hope that by a guy like Daniel Bryant being the star and doing what he's doing right now, I hope that, like Bruce said, Vince or Triple H, whatever the power thrust is up there, will look and notice that it's not the cookie-cutter guy. It's not the guy that's 6'7 and got arms like Titan. You know, it's not those guys that are being the fan favorite right now. Because, look, and back in the day, a guy like Dick Murdoch, who was not appealing in the ring for you to look at body-wise, was the best worker on the card every night when he was on the card. Terry Funk will tell you that. He was one of the very best about going to the ring, getting the job done, making the people like him or dislike him, and protecting the business, even though he maybe didn't look the part. So it's not so much about, again, what they're doing or how they're doing it. I don't think they have the collective group anymore. So to me, it's encouraging to meet some of the independent guys out there that are have that same passion and that same feel that the dressing rooms I was in the late 70s and early 80s had that same passion and that feel. And I hope there's more guys like that out there that are coming through, and I do hope they find a place to work and get to work in this business 6 or 7 nights a week and really hone their craft, because the sky's the limit. A few of these guys I've seen, they're so good in the ring. The kid yesterday that come and saw me, a young man, Tokyo Monster Kang, has come and spent the day with me and showed me a video of those Briscoe boys. I said, man, give me a number for them so I can call them. I'd love to book them on something. You could tell by their passion in an interview and a little bit of a match I saw that they really want to do it. Those kind of guys I'll bend over backwards for and try to do everything I can for, because that's what's encouraging about the business, a guy with the passion and the heart to do it and stay in it.
John, those guys are incredible. They worked the show last night with Matt and Jeff in the main event, and, you know, those are the guys that I said got a couple of hundred extra bucks in their pay envelope. They're the most respectful, decent guys I ever met. They served me to death. And even though I don't like sir, I realize I live in the South, and it's a proper way, and it's a proper way in the wrestling business to approach somebody who's been around a long time and stuff. But, gosh, what a couple of great guys. I mean, just great human beings, passion for the business, and they worked so hard last night. They're just great guys.
I would love to get them to Texas, man. I'd love to get them here.
Yeah, I've met them before. I've been backstage at a Ring of Honor show once doing some media stuff. And going backstage, I know, just being a fan, I know how to handle myself. I shook everybody's hand, even though I'm not a wrestler, you know, but I was very respectful to everyone. And the two guys that were probably the nicest to me back there were the Briscoe brothers. They had a bottle of whiskey open. They offered me a little bit. I think this is after their match, you know. And I did speak to Jay Briscoe for a moment, and I let him know that I enjoyed a promo that he had cut that I saw online. And the talk at the time was they had a tryout with WWE, and WWE, John Laurinaitis, did not like their look. They didn't think that the Briscoes had an appealing look. But then you look now at WWE, and they have guys like the Wyatt family, and the Briscoe brothers would have been perfect for a gimmick like the Wyatt family. They would have been 100% ready-made for that kind of gimmick. So that kind of shows you what we're talking about there, how that look is so important to the higher-ups, the brass in WWE. The Briscoes are two of the most talented professional wrestlers on the face of the earth. Those guys, like you said, Cue Ball, they go out and they give it all every single time. I've seen them wrestle all over the indies for the past 10, 12 years, constantly here in the Northeast in New Jersey, and they are fantastic. Class acts all the way. I'm with you there. We got a few minutes left. We got about, 15 minutes left in the show or so. We're going to kick it to Evan Ginsberg, and I want to ask Evan, what do you think is positive right now about the wrestling business and the direction it's taking? Are we going up or are we going down?
We're going sideways.
well put.
Yeah, okay. I like to pick and choose. You know, Ring of Honor is coming to New York with New Japan. That'll be off the hook. There, we have Dragon Gate that they come in every so often. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla out in California. You know, if you pick your spots, there are some great indies out there, and you guys have been talking about the Briscoes. I love the Briscoes. I've seen the greatest tag teams in history live, and I think the Briscoes are great. And, you know, if you pick and choose, there is great wrestling out there, and you touched on something earlier in the show. It's a golden era with the technology, inexpensive technology, of preserving the history of this great sport. And I say sport, okay? With all the shoot interviews and various documentaries, you can do something relatively inexpensive with podcasts, of course, and preserve the history of this business. And I think that's one of the great things that is being done now. You know, you have some of these conventions, and you see these legends, and by the next time the convention rolls around, unfortunately, a lot of these guys are gone. They're gone. Gary Hart did a convention, and days later he was gone, and Oliver Humperdinck and guys like this. And when you preserve them on film, I think it's very important. And there's been many, many books that have been done on wrestling over the past, you know, 10 or so years, and I think in that sense it's a golden age. And yours truly, I'm working on a documentary called 350 Days, and Billy Graham, Bret Hart, Greg Valentine, Santana, you know, Orndorff. We got 35 guys in there talking about being on the road 350 days a year. And, you know, it's great to preserve these stories.
Evan, is that your attempt to push the documentary 350 days, or is that just me?
That's the absolute truth. Yeah.
Well, I'm with you. That's fine, man. You're giving us some great content tonight. And I want to bring in one more special guest. Bruce, you're familiar with this gentleman. He is the host of Heartbeat Radio in Calgary. And his name is Jordan. Jordan, how you doing, man? You're on the line with Heartbeat Radio tonight, the U.S. version.
How are you guys doing? I'm doing great.
Thanks for joining us tonight, man. You wanted to call in? You want to say a couple words to Bruce or to the show tonight?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to call in. I wanted to say hello, catch up. I listened to the show tonight. It was really, really entertaining. And remember, guys, every Saturday there's going to be you guys have the American version of Heartbeat Radio, and we have the new HBU Radio as well as Bruce Hart on Saturdays at 10 p.m. Central on WrestlingWorld247.com. So it's good to see that Hart Brothers University is expanding and more people around the world are knowing about this great school.
Nice of you to say that, and I'd like to extend an invite anytime. I'd be delighted to have people like Evan or I've had Johnny on there already, and Tom and Q-Ball and all. Always appreciate you guys' perspective and your insights and your passion for the business. It's, redeeming and makes me proud to be part of this fraternity.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely awesome. We're going to wrap things up in just a moment. I just want to get some final words from the panel tonight. Once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us here on Heartbeat Radio, the debut here on Powerhouse Radio. We're going every single week, and I believe that Bruce is going to have an announcement about a special show we will be doing on May 18th, coming up in just a few weeks. But I'm going to go around the panel one more time, some final words from everybody. Mr. Mantell, you got any final words for the show tonight?
Yeah, I'd like to thank everybody that was on, Tom, Evan, of course, my buddy Bruce, Q-Ball, and, of course, Jordan calling in. Great to have you guys on tonight. And I will like to finish just by saying the third weekend in May, May 16th and 17th in Amsterdam, New York, upstate New York, is a real pro wrestling Hall of Fame induction weekend. Gary Hart, God rest his soul, is one of the inductees this year. Bruiser Brody, and Don Morocco, Mr. Wrestling 2. A great crew. I don't have my list right here in front of me, but if you're in this business, you have a passion for this business, if you enjoy what's going on, Stu Hart, I left the legendary Stu Hart and Leroy McGurk off my list there, going in this year into the Real Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. If you have anything to do with this business, you need to make a journey, make a travel, get up there, see this Hall of Fame. It's a brick and mortar building, three levels, wall-to-wall pictures, plaques, belts, outfits. Some of the greats of this business have donated and sent their stuff there. It's not about what Vince can buy or what's that. This is a nonprofit organization that runs the Hall of Fame, and they're doing it for the history of our business.
I've been there. I've been there. It's beautiful, and it's from the heart, and it's for all the right reasons. Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. If you have anything to do with this business, you need to check it out. It's pwhf.org is their website. The website's still back a few years ago. They haven't caught up to modern times. But, again, it's a nonprofit organization that's run, keeps it going. They're in a search induction. You can go to my website, johnnymantell.com, and get all the information about the Hall of Fame. You need to be a supporter of the Hall of Fame. Be part of it. Be part of the history of this business. Because otherwise, and I brought it on Bruce's show a couple weeks ago, I'll never forget 1978 sitting across from Lou Thesz, and Lou Thesz said to me, if we don't do something to preserve this business, someday it will become choreographed tumbling. So I hope that that sticks in everybody's mind and remembers that we've got to keep the history of this business alive so we know where it's come from and where it should go. And from the little town and little county in the middle of a big state of Texas, Vermonte County, Texas, Cowboy Johnny Mantell was proud to be on with everybody tonight. Bruce, my love to you and your family. Thank you for letting me have this moment of time. Check out the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you,
Mr.
Johnny
Mantell.
Thanks, John.
All right. Continue wrapping it up tonight. Mr. Ginsburg, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was a pleasure talking to you, getting to know you a little bit. Any final words for the show?
Yeah, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart how honored and privileged I am to be on a show with these great legends. And, you know, the WWE actually rewrites history. When you see these ridiculous, you know, top 50, you know, the greatest heels of all time, and Killer Kowalski's ranked number 50, you know, it's almost an anti-history. You're rewriting history. So it is important to preserve it. And by doing shows like this today, I think you're doing a great service. And this will float around in cyberspace forever. And, you know, much credit to you and the crew, and you know, just thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate it to have a guy like you on there. I have the utmost respect for everything you've done and your opinions too. I totally agree with you.
Oh, thank you. They had a WWE had a chart the top 50 talkers of all time, and you know Johnny Valiant's not on it. You know, it's ridiculous. They, you know, they create their own like alternate galaxy, their own universe, and it's not even reality based.
I totally agree. There's something wrong with the so-called WWE Hall of Fame when Lou Fez is not part of it, or Dynamite Kid, or Randy Savage, guys like that. You know, to say what, and then they got guys like Bob Uecker or Mr. T or something like that. You know,
yeah.
it's an aberration.
It's a money making business, like everything they do. It's an expensive ticket, and there's no actual hall as of yet. So, yeah, support the Iowa Hall of Fame, support the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. You know, these are done for the right reasons, and, you know,
deserve
the history.
Yeah, they're like Cooperstown in Canton, you know, Ohio or whatever, you know. And I'm glad that it is almost independent of the WWE, you know. It's probably a lot more integrity going into who's actually put in there, you know, rather than... you know, who kissed whose butt, or who was a friend of a friend, or whatever, you know, it's not the criteria, so.
Exactly.
All right, Evan, thank you so much for joining Pro Wrestling
thank
Powerhouse
you.
Radio, Heartbeat Radio tonight. I appreciate it, and so does Bruce. And Mr. Q-Ball Carmichael, man, I personally have been watching your Facebook posts from afar for a long time. You have some really insightful comments and diatribes that I've read in the past, and I'm here in Jersey. I've never seen you wrestle before in person. I've seen some of your footage on YouTube and whatnot, and I got a lot of respect for you, sir, and thank you so much for joining us tonight on Heartbeat Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on with, you know, legends like Bruce Hart and Johnny Mantell. I mean, it's just overwhelming for me. Life has become so good for me in the past 2 years, you know, for a guy who 7 years ago was hopelessly addicted to drugs and homeless, to rebuild his life and have two beautiful homes and a great family and friends in the business and respect and integrity in the business. It really is a pleasure for me. And, you know, to have Evan, who's been nothing but generous with his time on Legends Radio and Legends TV with me, to be on the show too. He's a close personal friend of mine. And, you know, it's just really a great, great testament to the business and, you know, what it's about, and you know, I couldn't be more excited to be on the radio with guys like this, and have Bruce coming down here in August to do a seminar. It's just super, super exciting. The guys in Eastern North Carolina and the surrounding states are just really excited to have Bruce come down here. So, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to learn from the mind that created and booked and did Stampede Wrestling and trained such a huge amount of wrestlers that went on to be successful in the business. And, you know, I could be more excited about the wrestling business today than I am. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the kind words, Q-Ball, and I'm really looking forward to getting down there into your neck of the woods in August and imparting some of the trade secrets from the dungeon and you know, all of that, you know. I'm excited about it, and I'm sure we're going to have an awesome camp down there, a seminar down there, and I'm really looking forward to meeting some of the people down in that neck of the woods, and I'm sure it's going to turn out well.
Absolutely, and Bruce, I want to get you here to Jersey one of these times. I want to try to work something out with a local promotion, have you do a seminar here. I mean, I'm not in any rush.
I'd love
to get it done, you know?
Yeah, I had an awesome time back in the 90s when we were doing coming down and doing those shows in Queens there and Deer Park and all those areas, and that's an incredible hotbed, and I'd love to see some rebirth at the grassroots level, you know. There's so many boroughs and little buildings down there that you could almost sustain it yourself, but I'm sure there's when I was down there was all kinds of guys like Tiger Khan who had incredible potential, and I think there's probably the same type of guys down there right now. I'd love to see that'd be part of my initiative right now, just seeing places like New York and Carolina and Texas and all that kind of, you know, come up again from, you know, the grassroots. And I think that's what we're all common initiative on everyone's part here. So I really look forward to hooking up with all you guys, you know, and I'm hoping we can all have some fun and, you know, get it back on track.
Speaking of that, Bruce, America's Championship Wrestling, May 31st, is coming to the Jersey Shore. It's a new promotion, and Teddy Hart's coming in for that. So throw that out there. And it's AmericansWrestling.com if you want to check out the website.
I hope it goes well.
Teddy should
be a huge hit.
Teddy's awesome. I watched him in Mexico on TV. The guy's great.
Yeah, he's got a lot of personality too. So I hope he gets a nice reception down there.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Bruce, it's been awesome tonight. The debut episode of Heart Beat Radio here on Powerhouse Radio, and thank you so much. And it was an honor for me to be on this panel and to kind of host this show and write this ship for tonight. We'll be back next week with Chad Terry as a host with you, Bruce. And actually, what's going to happen next week? I'm sorry. What's going to happen next week is we're going to be doing an Extreme Rules post show, and Bruce, you could join us at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for an Extreme Rules post-game show where we'll talk about the debauchery that went on in WWE that night. But, Bruce, the debut went very well tonight. And any final words for, you know, the fans out there listening?
I'd just like to once again thank them for their undying support, you know, anyone who's out there listening and giving us, you know, their ear. I'm appreciative that you guys think enough of us to tune in, and I'm looking forward to being back next week, and it was an honor and a privilege to be on the show with people like Evan and Tom and Johnny and yourself, Jay, and I'm excited about it, and thanks for the fine, as they say.
Absolutely, and Bruce, one last thing before we go. I was talking to Bob, and he was telling me about how you wanted to do a tribute show in a few weeks. I believe it's going to be on May 25th now for your brother Owen, the 15th anniversary. Can you tell everybody a little bit about that?
Yeah, time flies. It's hard to believe it's 15 years ago, but 1999, May 23rd. So we wanted to just reflect on Owen and in a positive way. I don't want to even dwell on any of the negatives, just sort of celebrate and reflect on his life and times, and that'll be sort of the theme on the show that week, and we're hoping to get some special guests, and be delighted if everyone wanted to chime in or offer perspectives or whatever, you know, so that's something I think it'll be a nice tribute to Owen and the 15th anniversary of his accident. So I appreciate the you mentioning that, and looking forward to it.
Absolutely, and there's nothing but positive things to say about him. And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight here on Heartbeat Radio. Join us next week around this time at 11 p.m. for the Extreme Rules post show, and then in 2 weeks, Heartbeat Radio returns. Stay tuned to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com for more information on what's going on Heartbeat Radio on May 11th when it returns to the air. Check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com as always. We have amazing content on the site. We don't do copy and paste dirt sheet news. We don't take what stuff like Dave Meltzer and Mike Johnson, although they might be nice people, we don't take what they say as fact. We give you opinions, we give you history, we give you information, and the fans from around the world are our staff. That's who we are. We're fans from around the world. I've got people from Canada, England, Australia, and everywhere else. So please check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. For Bruce and the entire panel tonight, thank you so much for joining us on the debut of Heartbeat Radio here on the Powerhouse Radio Network. Take care, everybody.
Thank all you. The best.
Thank you all.